was December the 6th, 1983. I was doing time for armed robbery. At 4 in the morning, I was sitting in my cell. I heard a whistle blow, then I heard somebody yell.
There's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. There's a riot going on. Up in cell block number 9.
Hello, all you death-wish addicts, you corruptors of truth, you killers of spirit, you marauders of youth, get your hands in the air. I want to see your hands in the air. If you're selling these lies, these impossible dreams, you can keep on washing, but you'll never get clean. Get your hands in the air. Ah, let me see your hands in the air.
Available, please turn the music off. Thank you. Welcome, friends. I'm sorry for that technical glitch. This is Take No Prisoners at the Republic Broadcasting Network. I'm sorry for the technical problems. My apologies, but we're here now, and so let's look ahead and let's look forward to what should be a very interesting program. I'd like to share with you today and tomorrow some of the latest advancements in the BIC process. One of them was just developed 10 minutes before we went on the air, and also continue down the track of discussing prison extraction, getting into the specific presentment that one might use under those circumstances for rescinding previous process and for executing our presentation of payment and the redraft of the contract and the various accompanying documents such as default stipulations and confession of judgment and other goodies that can help to influence public officials to properly and legally perform the duties of their public offices. And that's all we want. We never want a public official to operate outside his scope of powers. On the contrary, it's important that he operate specific to and execute by both commission as well as omission the duties with which he has been commissioned. So that said, let's get on with it. The phones, folks, are open. And the call-in number today is 1-800-313-9443. Today is Saturday, November 24th in the year of our Lord, 2007. Folks, if you'd like to order the Collecting in Bankruptcy seminar, the good news is that you can order it through Brian at hush.com. Bad news is that we're out of them, and it's going to take another 24 to 48 hours for Philip after the
on the cement floor this morning. My head felt like somebody been a-walking on it. I don't know how I got
I don't know what happened to the commercial, but I'm going to presume that we are back. And we're coming to you live from New York, once a great state. And it still exists, by the way, except most people are only aware of the state of New York. By the way, for you new beginners, these are not just semantical differences. If you look in the old literature, excuse me, and you look in old court cases, you'll find that New York was referred to as a state with a small s. The laws written back in the 1700s and 1800s talked about the states with small s's because it wasn't an entity, a state. State was just a noun, just like if you referred to the president. The correct spelling of the president of the United States, if you're not calling him by his name, such as President Bush or President Clinton, is with a small p, and you can verify that by looking in the Chicago Manual of Style. Same way with a small s. So if you see the state of New York with a capital S, that is a complete entity, just like the title of a book or the title of a movie. Some titles of some books sometimes capitalize the word the. I'm trying to think of an example. I just came upon one this past week. And, of course, doing what we do, we notice such things regularly. And if the title of a book is, for instance, if the title of a movie is The Godfather, then capital T should be capitalized. If the title of the movie is officially Godfather, then it would be a small TH, although a small T in the word the, although most people would still refer to it as the. So if you see New York State with a capital S, that's the same as the state of New York. It's referring to the corporate entity. It must refer to the corporate entity because they don't know how to function outside the corporate entity, other than some very limited functions through the Secretary of State and the Secretary of the Treasury of Washington, D.C., of the United States Treasury, Secretary Paulson. The same is true for many other legal entities, including ourselves, church associations, and other associations which would be non-religious. I remember reading literature prior to 1910, some bar association discussions regarding churches prior to 1910. Back then, almost no church was incorporated. And, of course, most of the church associations were eventually enticed into incorporating by the benefit of having access to the courts, and sometimes just by subterfuge. Of course, not only did they not have access to the courts previous to that incorporation, the courts had no access to them, and they did not appear in their scope of powers. Now, that is never overtly mentioned in a court decision that is adverse to a church, because once the church is incorporated or the church has federal ID numbers or it even comes into that court, they will simply operate under not just the assumption but the common knowledge, the common understanding that that church, of course, must submit to the court. The court's the highest law of the land. And any church that accepts that, of course, has abandoned its pledge to honor only the true Lord. There is a corollary to that pledge, that the original church still exists. And if you look at that bar association literature, you will find, specific to New York State, that they actually discuss that. They discuss the church body politic as opposed to the church corporate politic. And the reason that distinction is important is because the church still exists. And if the people of the church knew that they could gather under that banner, move out on the lawn, come outside that corporate building that you have deeded over to the state, move out on the lawn, move the pulpit out on the lawn, and clearly announce, we are meeting here today as the church of whatever, a church body politic outside any and all other foreign and corporate jurisdictions, and then bring the politicians to speak, the United States could do nothing. And I guarantee you there is not a single attorney in the United States of the million attorneys who practice here, not a single attorney who so-called specializes in religious law who is even aware of that. His first duty would be to tell you, oh, you can't do that. You're going to lose your 501c3 status. You're going to lose your nonprofit status. But no one ever turns around and asks him, and if we lose our nonprofit status, what are we left with? Our immune status, of course. The same is true for the straw man entity and the living man, for the church and the church corporate politic, for movies, for states. They exist in parallel planes, very much like you used to see on Star Trek. Remember, there'd be a parallel universe. What did they used to call it? In subspace, they called it. Well, the living man still exists in space. It's only the corporation that exists in subspace. But in subspace, they know nothing about living space, and they operate exclusively as if the corporation is the be-all and end-all of all existence. So you may keep that in mind, because you may find some remedies within that distinction between the two. I actually had a constitutional authority attorney, a specialist in constitutional law. He didn't know who he was talking to at the time. He just thought I was some guy who was coming to him with inquiring about a particular case. Actually, I was coming to him to pump his brain as to how the public was thinking on something. And he said to me, regarding a church that I was defending, he said, as far as the state of New York is concerned, you don't exist. And folks, I'm sure what he remembers of that conversation is this moron on the other side of the phone who burst out laughing when he said that. Because even he, forgive them, Lord, they know not what they speak. Even he did not know what he was stating. He had no idea that he was advocating for a corporation as a puppet subject servant of the corporation. In fact, he recognizes that he is a servant, but he has no idea that it's to a corporation. He said to me that there are two jurisdictions that you have to obey, that you're subject to, is the way he put it. The United States and the state of New York. He knew nothing about what he was speaking. So keep that in mind when you deal with attorneys. Anyway, folks, let's get on with it. I'm going to call up some notes here from the Stage 1 BIC folder, and that would be the Stage 1 notary process known as Option 3, the comprehensive administrative process for court cases. And we were looking at the comprehensive administrative process itself, which was a foreign advisory, a 5 or 6 page letter that includes all of the bells and whistles that would be used to return process in a court case. It's specific, very specific, to a court case and especially a criminal case. And let me just announce right here before the break that tomorrow, at the beginning of the program tomorrow night, I will announce a significant modification of the BIC process. A modification that I just discussed with someone over the telephone less than a half hour before airtime. And you don't want to miss that discussion. We're going to be modifying certain things and eliminating certain things and adding one particular document that I think will go a long way especially in non-court cases, but also in court cases, it will go a long way to ensuring that when you make a payment to a government agency, that payment is properly credited. So you don't want to miss tomorrow. All right, on to the letter rogatory. As you know, we call the letter rogatory a foreign advisory, and if you check, I think it was last Sunday, that would be, what, 6 days earlier, today is the 24th, so last Sunday, I believe the 18th, we reviewed the opening page of this particular document, and it is the document, it is the document to, I'm searching for it right now as I'm fumbling. It's the document by which we make presentment of the bonded promissory note or any payment instrument that one may be using. Some are using bonds, some are using bonded promissory notes, and the like. All right, so here's that document. And just to refresh your memory, the first paragraph read the following. My apologies for the pause. Computer's a little slow here. All right. It started, first paragraph, the above noted offer to expand funds under public policy and all such offers listed on Schedule O, that would be a list of all the 100 offers that you've been dishonoring over the last 6 years, which is why they're angry with you. And all such offers listed on Schedule O are being returned for cause, annexed to this advisory note, accepted for value, and attached to full payment for all associated liabilities, real and imagined. Your want of legal authority to apply process in the superior foreign jurisdiction of the living man on the land where this letter rogatory originates is a matter of record. It would be unwise for you to confabulate an appearance from this communication. Now, folks, this is the start of the letter that one would use to redraft the most difficult of the contracts that one would be involved in. For instance, if I was involved in a prison situation, this would be the letter I would use, other than possibly a commercial lien process, augmented, though, to indicate that we are returning process like this. Now, what separates this return of process from the return of process that we engaged in during the 90s, where various people encountered difficulty, is that this is backed up by strong commercial process. Full payment in a manner that is very difficult for them to ignore. And it's also backed up by confession of judgment, stipulated facts, when they fail to respond, and the entire notary process. It's also grounded in a political declaration document. There are many. I have four of those, four different ones. I have the one that Charlene introduced at our seminar back in last November at Rockland. I have the two private ID documents that I have filed and made presentment of, and I have my original treaty with the United States, which goes back a number of years. Any one of these would be an adequate political status document. More importantly, I have United States acceptance of those documents. And folks, check your apostilles. I read the apostille language on the air a couple of weeks ago. I won't waste time reading it now, but it is a powerful document. In New York, now, not every state is the same, but in New York, the apostille document specifically tells you that this is the court of the seal, the seal of the court. All those seals out there who have courts, my apologies. It's the seal of the court, and public officials are to give full faith and credit to the acts of that clerk of court. We'll be back in 3 minutes, actually in 1 minute. left, you'll notice a coin slot. Welcome back, my friend. That's another short break. I would suggest that you don't break for 3 minutes. You know how you would normally excuse yourself during the break, and you would go to the restroom, and you'd go to the kitchen and grab a slice of pizza if you're listening live, and then you might go to the other computer and check who's ahead, if the Jets are playing the Giants, or whatever nonsense it is that we pay so much homage to. Don't do that, because we're back, and this is where you want to be. Next paragraph says, you have been named co-payee with the Secretary of the Treasury on, and then we would name a bond of some sort. Now, I don't have mine filled in because we have lots of different instruments that we use. So probably you would name the the offset bond, because that's the first instrument in pure BIC process that delineates a division of the face value of the bond to the benefit of two different parties, the United States Treasury through the Secretary of the Treasury, and to the benefit of the all of the collateral of the living man who's issuing the bond. You can also divide it up other ways. You can divide it in, for instance, if you were dealing with ABC Agency, it could be to the benefit of ABC Agency and to the benefit of the Department of the Treasury. But you want the Department of the Treasury's hand in there for at least half the value, especially if you're involved in a nasty criminal courtroom case. So you've been named co-payee with the Secretary of the Treasury on whatever the name of the bond is, secured or private offset bond. It is a secured bond. It's secured by the indemnity bond, and I like to point that out in the titles. On deposit with the U.S. Treasury. The attached copy of secured bonded promissory note number whatever in the amount of whatever is drawn against the bond by prearrangement with the Secretary. It should be recorded as a demand deposit instrument, notwithstanding, to ensure your liability as holder in due course is notwithstanding. To ensure your liability as holder in due course is memorialized in the record, you have been appointed attorney in fact for legal fiction Sam Kennedy. You are duty bound to process the note and execute the mandatory transfer of funds to Treasury no later than the next business day, or stand in the name, place, instead of legal fiction Sam Kennedy for all commercial and corporeal liabilities in this matter. Failure to post the payment dollar for dollar to the above noted account or transmit the funds will be certified in an administrative judgment to be issued by Notary Public John Jones as prima facie evidence of your confessed obligations. Once your confession to the theft of public funds is certified, collateral subpoenas will be issued to ensure your opportunity under penalty of perjury to produce a notice of dishonor from Treasury on the coupon. Disprove the theft, in other words, to ensure your opportunity to disprove the theft, identify the lawful surety, and explain how a party to the action sitting in judgment does not comprise treason. You may wish to consult outside counsel. As a public official, your understanding of the associated legal perils is assumed. Any overage may be treated as a windfall monetary expansion for the benefit of, you might mark the agency's name down there, until maturity. Then it says, please find the notice, and then we have a list of four items. A notice of U.S. acceptance of declaration of political status. Number two, notice of waiver of benefits and privileges. And that is incorporated into this letter, that notice of waiver of benefits and privileges. Three and four would be any prior settlement agreements that you might have had from your previous administrative processes that have gone awry. And item four would be United States stipulation binding on you that no controversy exists in this matter. So if you have a previous schedule of stipulations, there it is. You've thrust it right under their nose. It's binding. it's a done deal. I'm recognized. You need to abide by it or you're going to be in trouble. Then we have a bunch of numbered paragraphs. Let me see how many there are. Well, too many. The numbered paragraphs cease at paragraph 24, preservation of rights, and then there are a couple of standalone paragraphs. One is called default in bold, and one is called demand for payment in bold. Remember, what's at the end of the letter sometimes is more important than what's at the beginning of the letter. And for the benefit of those folks in prison who need a transcript, I'm going to read you this letter piece by piece and analyze it as we go, and that's part of the process that we are putting together here today, and we started about 3 weeks ago. Paragraph numbered one, uppercase, political status, period. And then it goes to normal case. And that's the way each of these paragraphs is delineated, with an uppercase title at the beginning of the paragraph after the numeral. Pursuant to United States obligation under Convention de la Haye, due 5, the numeral 5, October, with a small o, 1961, and then we have that footnoted, so that at the bottom of the page is a footnote that that's referring to the Hague Convention of. There were two Hague Conventions in 1961. This is the Hague Convention abolishing the legalization of documents, as I recall, or something to that effect. Let me look up the footnote. Yes, it says, in brackets, it says, for your reference, or for your ref, period, Hague Convention of 1961 abolishing the legalization of foreign documents, close brackets. And we put it in brackets because we don't want to be citing their materials. We don't care about their materials. We're just giving them a courtesy advisory. Pursuant to United States obligation under Convention de la Haye, due 5 October 1961, comma, the United States has officially recognized my foreign credentials. There's also a footnote on the United States, and that's giving a reference at the bottom of the page to, 28 U.S.C. 3002, as I recall. And that would be their definition of the United States as a federal corporation. The United States has officially recognized my foreign credentials. In parenthesis, Exhibit A. That A is in quotations. Close parenthesis, period. U.S. agents such as yourself are required to extend full faith and credit, period. U.S. recognition that I am not a United States citizen, subject, vessel, or person, nor subject to your jurisdiction. That should also include resident. Nothing could be more important than that. Resident, comma, vessel, or person. Person is in quotation marks. Nor subject to your jurisdiction, comma, arrest, comma, detention, or distress in the absence of a written election to submit, comma, is the supreme law of the de facto United States and fully binding on you, notwithstanding your normal business practices, nor anxiety regarding unalienable rights of a living man on the land, that's capital M and capital L, holding court in his sovereign capacity as a neutral, non-belligerent, without the corporate United States. That's a mouthful, folks, but that's certainly, that could be a program in and of itself. What that is basically a statement that the U.S. recognition that I am not a resident, citizen, subject, nor a U.S. person, is binding upon you, because it's the supreme law of the land based upon treaty. And that's regardless of how much you loathe the idea that I am speaking to you as a foreign court, a living man on the land. That's a very important paragraph. That's why we begin with that. We're back after a commercial break or on break. We're about to find out.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
aboard the boogie train. It's the boogie thing.
Welcome back, my friends. This is Sam Kennedy coming to you live this Saturday, November 24th. By the way, folks, I forgot to ask if you had a meaningful Thanksgiving. Now, there's a holiday that hasn't been destroyed by commercialization. Did you see the blitzkrieg of television commercials the day or two before Thanksgiving? The 4 a.m. openings, the 5 a.m. openings, the 6 a.m. openings, and let's not forget the early opening of our favorite store, Target. What's the full name of Target? Target? I'm going to look that up. Target, I want to make sure we pay just due and homage to that particular store. Let's see what we can find here. It's probably Target Stores. Target store. Let's see what it says online. Welcome to Target. Yes, friends. I just see that big bullseye. And now they're going to load some kind of media presentation. I guess it's just Target. I'll tell you. Once they barred the Salvation Army, that Target became increasingly more interesting, didn't it? Now, I'm not saying if you happen to have a 50 caliber machine gun and you're driving by Target that you go putting bullets in the center of that big bright light. I'm not advocating that. But I am saying that Target has made themselves a target for appropriate spiritual and commercial remedies, just like the United States likes to use against companies, right? What's the first thing the United States does? They freeze their assets worldwide, which they could not do unless they were using the full power of the Secretary of the Treasury in his extradited capacity as agent and bookkeeper for the International Monetary Fund. Could they? They couldn't go to a so-called foreign country and freeze the assets, but they do. And I suggest that we might want to seek similar remedies for that lovely company that decided because the Salvation Army, I don't know the Salvation Army's policy, but I believe it screens for or it does not provide equal opportunity for confessed homosexuals. So Target last year, I don't know about this year, I don't go to Targets or anywhere near them anymore because of this, but they barred the Salvation Army. If you can imagine the thought process that would go into actually hurting the charitable functions of an organization that has helped millions of people in tragedy and calamity, millions of Americans, because they refuse to cotton to your New Age political agenda. It really does boggle the mind, and it makes you wish you could get in a nice little discussion at the next public meeting of the shareholders with the operators of that company. In fact, there's an idea. Folks, find out when the next meeting of the Target shareholders is. Send it along to me. Might make for an interesting, fun afternoon. Buy a single share of Target. If they are, I'll presume they're publicly traded. And then I take them to task at the shareholders meeting. So I don't know how we got off on that tangent. How did we get off on that tangent? Well, I'm sure it must have been a tremendously important thought if we can't retain it. But anyway, back to the foreign advisory, which, by the way, for reference to last week, is the letter that goes back to the fiduciary on the instrument entitled Foreign Advisory Notice of Private Counterclaim. This is the counterclaim. So if you decide you don't wish to use the simple counterclaim, option one in the stage one VIC folder, the one or two page counterclaim that would be submitted with a copy of with the original instrument and fiduciary instructions, but you have something meatier, a situation worthy of a more robust response, then this letter also serves as a counterclaim, albeit much more extensive. Notice of foreign court, payment and settlement, notice of waiver of benefits and privileges, and opportunity to exhaust administrative remedy. It also can have a notice of rescission attached to it. So the last sentence in paragraph number one is, to avoid unnecessary liability, all necessary steps should be taken to prevent attack on my freedom, property, mobility, and interests, and to return all of my property. Now I know why we spoke about Target, because we were talking about Thanksgiving. I do hope that you were able to avoid the commercialism of Thanksgiving and the oncoming Christmas season, and that you had a meaningful time in reflection, either by yourselves or with your families, yesterday. And in addition, that you might consider doing something that I've been doing for probably 8 to 10 years now, which is a complete abandonment of the commercial aspects of Christmas, which is funny considering I teach commerce. I don't send Christmas cards unless they're homemade. I certainly, even when I was practicing, eliminated the practice of sending a store-bought card. Now, there's a thought, right? You get the flyer in the mail. You hand it to your receptionist or one of your business people. You say, here, take care of Christmas as usual. Order these. And they go out and they order 100 or 1,000, a large quantity of pre-made Christmas cards with a picture of you, your wife, your children, and your dog on it, showing you in blissful affluence so that you can contact all the other doctors if you're a specialist and send them a nice little card that their girl opens for them and sticks on a wall or on a wreath somewhere near the front desk so everybody sees what a wonderful guy you are. You have all those pre-printed gold leaf cards, and then they get discarded after January 1st. That is really meaningful. I suggest you might want to sit down and write a letter about your family's undertakings that year and how the children are doing and the grandchildren, and send that off in a simplified card to all the people you care about. I have one friend down in Nashville, an emergency room, director of an emergency room, an old friend of mine, best physician I ever met, by far, in a league by himself, who does that every year, and I've been meaning to call them for the last year and a half. They have no idea what I do, folks. They have no idea that I spend my day talking to people involved in criminal cases and in basically one way or the other, directly or through proxy, telling judges to take a hike because we've settled all of these charges commercially since they're operating as corporate entities with commercial charges, commercial instruments demanding money. They have no idea that I specialize in paying these people and then in liquidating those payments on the back end. But I will call them. In fact, I think I'll send them a copy of this CD. Paragraph number two, notice of rescission, correction of errors. It is my intention to fulfill all lawful treaty obligations as a non-belligerent neutral without the United States. I apologize for any and all commercial dishonors which may have occurred, and hereby rescind my consent and signature from all previous documents and instruments in this matter for cause. Now, to all my friends and listeners inside the prisons of America, to all the political prisoners, I'm not interested, by the way, in the rapists and the murderers and those guys who get drunk and then beat someone up on the street or wield knives with indiscretion or just act like general vermin, instruments of the devil. But to all of those Christian men and women who discovered their freedom and then paid a heavy price for it, you might want to start off the letter with a brief correction of errors. It could be as simple as, dear such and such, thank you for your offer to expand funds under public policy. I hereby apologize sincerely for any and all previous commercial dishonors committed in my ignorance. And present correction of same here under. That's what the letter's all about, is correcting all those commercial dishonors. This becomes especially important if you have to rescind an appearance bond where you signed defendant without, well, if you were unfortunate enough to sign at all, but I do understand being under pressure to do that within the joint, or if you fail to sign as an authorized representative or an agent thereof, which, as you know, if you've listened to this program, often sends, that act alone sends the courtrooms into a tizzy. They just go hog wild because they don't have a defendant present. So if you signed on as the defendant, this would be the start of the process to unregister, to undefendant. This is the start of becoming the undefendant, the nightmare in this courtroom. The minute goes on to say, to avoid unnecessary liability, all necessary steps should be taken to prevent attack on my freedom, property. Excuse me, folks, wrong paragraph. That was the last paragraph. It goes on to, paragraph two goes on to say, there is no evidence that consent is defective upon United States' failure to disclose the risks and ramifications of presenting myself as an ans legis artificially United States person and resident of a federal district, nor that consent which is granted under threat of physical harm is not instantly void. All such documents are hereby null and void. So if they brought you in, and in an iron yoke and tossed you in a cell, you refused to sign in, and they left you, probably if you refuse to sign in, you get treated a lot better than if you do sign in. They left you alone in a 40-degree cell in shirt sleeves, and you're 65 years old. No food, no diabetic medication. They basically said, we don't care if you die. You are vermin to us, which is, as you know, the way the United States prisons work, right or wrongly, your visitation to it, then this would be a way of listing a negative averment without even having to use an affidavit of negative averment, evidencing or memorializing the evidence that your consent initially was defective as well. It could not be proper consent, because it wasn't disclosed to you that by signing the document, you were now signing on to the entire United States Federal Corporation as grist for the mill. You're the substrate that that judiciary is going to chew on by virtue of that unrestricted signature. They have immediate access to your account. They can charge you and will. They will fine you. And where's that fine coming from? It's coming from your credit with the United States, of course, and put you in the prison. So, in effect, they can do the same thing to you that you do when you sign the W-4 for work. In effect, you're saying, instead of selling you my labor, I'm going to trade you my labor and add to it my credit so that you can deduct the entire cost of my labor from your taxes. So now you're paid twice. You receive my labor, and you receive the deduction from the taxes. And if you add on that I prepaid all of that in 1933, you've been paid three times. This is why we have such fun in commerce, because we go after all of it. So this says, after that one sentence negative averment, it states, all such documents are hereby null and void. Paragraph number three, payment in full, period. And that was in uppercase letters. The said secured promissory note, bonded promissory note, secured bonded promissory note, or the said note with a capital N, has been presented under notary seal, semicolon, under notary seal is in bold. The bond is registered, semicolon, registered is in bold. The funds are certified, certified is in bold, semicolon. So it reads like this. The said payment coupon has been presented under notary seal. The bond is registered. The funds are certified. Processing is being monitored in real time to protect the integrity of the public record. All outstanding accounts are to be settled in full, dollar for dollar, to the complete satisfaction of the plaintiff, pursuant to the letter of instructions attached to the coupon, attached to the note, or the fiduciary instructions attached to the note. Please advise the grantor through the said notary if the bank returns the promissory note with evidence of a substantive legal defect, such as a notice of dishonor from the secretary. A return without such cause will be certified by the notary as a conversion of all liability by default. And you can explain that to them if you think they won't understand it. In other words, you will be holding, you will be responsible for all liabilities formerly attributed to the defendant slash debtor commercially and corporeally. Or you'll be responsible for all commercial and corporeal liabilities. You keep wanting to make that point. Well, let me say this. You want to make that point once forcefully and properly, that you are responsible for going to prison for this entity since you have accepted all liability for it. And here's the proof of it. And here's second proof of it. If necessary, we can have third witness on that. We can call you in by deposition. Paragraph number four. Taxable gain, period. Seizure of funds, period. Distress of bond, period. All of that in uppercase. And the paragraph reads, removal of the attached form 1040V from the coupon will comprise obstruction of Treasury's position. Treasury will be asked to seize any funds the notary certifies as missing or withheld. The notary certification will comprise your consent to having the taxable gain reported on Form 1099C, making an assignment of the liability to CID for collection, ordering the Controller General to make the account and issue distress warrants through the Secretary to the District Marshals, capital S and capital D, and or distressing your bond through the surety, all of those being undertakings that are within our power and purview to execute. But one would not include any of them in such a letter unless one had complete determination and appropriate skill to materialize those statements, those representations, so that they're not just hollow words on a page. Because if they are hollow words, then the Lord will see to it that you pay the price for those hollow words. You know how? They'll keep coming at you, and you will back down. And it will be more expensive, and the sense of failure will be even more prescient than if you folded your cards now. If you're going to fold your cards, fold them early. Why string it out? Why ante up for more than you might ordinarily have had to? Now, that's your, I can't tell anyone what to do. That choice is available to everyone. But I'll tell you this, those who remain strict in commerce usually do fine. Let me give you an example. I received an email of a fellow who used a note of some sort. Now, I don't know the character of the instrument because he partially followed my process and he partially followed the process of someone who announced that process at the collecting and bankruptcy seminar in this past September, I believe it was. And he announced how he had gone to a sheriff's sale to buy back his own house. He used a BOE, and in fact, I read all this on the air. And then the BOE was up against the wall, so he came to my, I believe it was my August lecture, the August Law Merchant Leadership Conference. And when he returned home, he used a bond and promissory note, but he filed it with Treasury following the recommendations of a friend. So they changed the process. That friend then went about disseminating his process around the country. And I don't like to comment on other people's processes. I wish everyone well. Everyone from that gentleman to David Clarence to whomever you find of interest. And believe me, many of these people have excellent ideas, and some have excellent track records. This fellow did not have an excellent track record, and in fact has had problems. I've received numerous copies of letters of complaint that have found their way to me about process that's been abandoned, unable to get on the phone, things which do suggest a deficit in process. Or occasionally I've not returned phone calls because I felt that the fellow was incorrigible. So I've made a decision not to return phone calls. I don't think that was the case in this particular situation. I think people deserve an answer to their inquiries or a straight out statement that I don't think you're going to be successful. I think you're going to get yourself into trouble. So I won't be communicating with you about this any longer because you haven't heeded those warnings. One or the other. But anyway, this process was tried by someone else who now has gotten into trouble. I don't know the details, but I'll tell you what I do know when we come back after the break. You're listening to Take No Prisoners at the Republic Broadcasting Network, folks. I'm Dr. Sam Kennedy. My apologies for the phone problems we're having today, too.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Have you ever considered purchasing storable foods? Well, now is the time to do so and take advantage of Ready Reserve Foods pre-special, pre-oil shortage, pre-drought, pre-bank collapse, pre-housing collapse, pre-dollar collapse, pre-economic collapse, pre-martial law, pre-war, possibly nuclear, pre-bird flu special, and your order will be shipped within 7 business days, not months like some food brokers. Ready Reserve manufactures the food we sell, and we have done so continuously for over 35 years. Call 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com. We produce only the best in storable foods, all from the USA. 1-800-453-2202. Prepare yourself and family for some rough and bumpy times. 1-800-453-2202 or visit our website at ReadyReserveFoods.com.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to Take No Prisoners at the Republic Broadcasting Network. Folks, if you need a notary, I suggest you contact Notary Depot, D-E-P-O-T, at hush.com, and they'll be able to fix you up with a worthy BIC knowledgeable, commercial process knowledgeable notary who has experience. Let's see what other announcements I've forgotten. If you have any questions for me, please send them to restore.america@hotmail.com. And if you'd like to order any of the seminars, the party to contact would be Brian. And you would do that by sending an email to takenoprisoners@hush.com and then just ask for Brian within the email or in the subject line. You may want to download the programs in September and October from the Republic Broadcasting Archives if you're in a real controversy. We've spent a lot of time on trial by notary and on bankruptcy procedures as instant remedies for the public gone wild. I think that may do it here, folks. Excuse my ignorance. Especially the bankruptcy stuff is on the September 16th, November 3rd, November 10th, and November 11th archive dates. And also the September 2nd and September 9th broadcasts. And one other, September 2nd, September 9th, and September 29th for various notary enforcement strategies that we discussed in some depth. You may find that helpful. My apologies for the technical difficulties today. I think the phones are not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and the obviously we've had some technical problems with the commercial breaks, which has been to our advantage, but not to the network's advantage. We want to make sure the network, what did they used to say on The Sopranos, gets its cut. So that said, let's get back to the comprehensive administrative court process, the comprehensive administrative process, which is common to court cases and also is beneficial in any sort of a scenario where one needs a redraft of the contract and one decides not to use the commercial lien package. The one I'm reading you is the latest wording. It literally was finished only a week ago. It has not been formally used, although that's going to end today. It's the same process, only with upgraded wording and, of course, modified for our latest knowledge and feedback. It's to be presented by way of notary presentment. It has a one, possibly a two-page notary presentment letter, a notary certificate of service, which lists all the documents that are being presented. And I'm going to review that tomorrow night with that announcement that I mentioned about a new presentment method that is critical to success in BIC and I think will cement very easy solutions in many BIC situations. They may not be quick, but they will pan out over the months. It is also presented with attachments and any auxiliary documents that would be beneficial in the situation. The primary auxiliary documents that we're most concerned with are Schedule C, Confession of Judgment, and Schedule D, the Default Confession, Stipulations, and Admission, both of which can go a long way to taking a rogue judge and waking him up to his own vulnerability. Folks, that music means...